Welcome to the Sunday Night There Is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. This meeting is being recorded, so you may visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. So welcome Abby D., a compulsive overeater from Michigan.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much, Catherine, for getting started. And thank you, Jessica, for asking me to speak. And thank you to those of you who are here tonight, because I texted my posse and said that I was speaking tonight. So my name is Abby D. I'm a recovered compulsive eater, bulimic in Michigan. And I've been recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body for about 7 years, and I've maintained abstinence throughout that time while working the steps. So today, welcome to the newcomers. This is kind of going to be just like an overview of how it worked for me, what it was like, and you know what I did to recover. So I'm going to mostly be sticking in chapter 5, how it works in the Big Book, because I feel like it gives a very good overview of how I need to change my life in order to recover. So it says, the very first sentence is, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who cannot recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. And then it goes on to talk about like people needing to have rigorous honesty. And I always wanted to give myself to this program, but I don't believe I did it with my whole heart. I grew up, how I came into OA was I grew up as a bulimic, like started at like 14 years old. I was very, very early on introduced to that. I also checked out with other adrenaline seeking activities such as drugs and alcohol and other substances. And I was always like on the fast track, just adrenaline seeking everywhere, highs and lows. I didn't ever live in the middle emotionally. My mom told me one time I was like a tornado, and it's interesting in the Big Book because it says, you know, we are like tornadoes roaring our way through the lives of those we love. And I was like that. Like as a teenager, I was just really like rebellious, defiant. No one was going to tell me what to do, but I also was like super driven too. So, you know, I went to the extremes in eating and drinking and drug using and partying and all of that. And, you know, it wasn't really until I got sober from those other things did I realize that like my food was completely out of control. Like I knew, obviously, I didn't tell people I was binging and purging, but for a while I could kind of hide that I was overeating and that I was like obsessed with food, because it was kind of like culturally acceptable to love food. But when I really, really realized my life was unmanageable was when I could not, like I couldn't function. I put all the other things down, and that was the only thing I had to go to was food. It was my only source of comfort. It was my only source of, like, you know, it talks about in the Big Book, like the ease and comfort that comes at once. And that's what I was chasing, except I stopped getting that feeling. I started chasing it, but I couldn't get there. So it just started to be like, I don't know, in AA, I'm maybe not supposed to mention AA, but in another fellowship I hear, you know, at first it's fun, then it's fun with problems, and then it's just problems. And that's how it was for me. At first it was like socially kind of okay, and then it was socially less okay the way I was eating, and I was starting to hide things. And so, I started to have some problems. And then at the end, it was just total isolation problems. Like, I mean, being a bulimic, like there were so many things I said I would never do. Like, I'll never like throw up and like carry it to the garbage can. That was probably like the worst, was like just feeling so out of control that I needed to get rid of the food that I was consuming, that I was willing to go to any length for my disease. So now I'm willing to go to any length for my recovery. But like, when I think about the things I used to do to like get what I wanted in terms of food or get rid of it, like, I mean, any length, like, no family member could stop me, no like event, no schooling, no person. And it says, the description of the compulsive eater, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that I was a compulsive eater and I could not manage my own life. I definitely was that. I felt like there were some times where I thought I could manage my own life. Like I went to college, I have a car, and it's like, I mean, that has nothing to do with like my unmanageable. Like, I was so unmanageable. The bedevilments talk about we were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional nature. We were a prey to our misery and depression. We were full of uselessness. Like, I couldn't make a living. Like, I mean, all of those things were true for me. I was scrounging for things to grasp onto and just like couldn't get it. And then it says, B, that probably no human power could have relieved our compulsive eating. No human could have ever stopped me. I mean, I've gotten like caught by people before, the most ridiculous things I would say. I remember one time I was, sorry, my alarm's right now. The most ridiculous things I would say, like, I remember binging and purging at my best friend's house, and her mom, like, this is kind of gross, but like smelled it in the bathroom. And then I said, oh, it's because like I just got this piercing, and like my piercing is like, infected, and like my ear piercing. An ear piercing doesn't make the smell of vomit. Like, sorry, but it doesn't. And it was just like, I really thought people were believing me, like I thought it was so believable. And like one time my brother came out of the bathroom after I went in there, and my family was home. Like, what the heck? And my mom was just sitting out. Like, I just joined back in with my family, and my brother, this was when I was still at home, so like, a teenager. And my brother came out just screaming, like, there's vomit on the toilet and blah blah blah, and you gotta stop this. And I was just like, that was not me. Like, I don't know what you're talking about, just like, I thought that I could hide it. And those things didn't make me stop. Like, no human power can relieve me of this. And even like when I ended up coming into OA and telling, like I came clean with my mom. I told my best friend, like, it still didn't stop me. Like, I literally had no human power. I had to come in here and realize that, see, God couldn't would if he were sought. And I wasn't quite sure what that meant. I wasn't quite sure of my relationship with God. There was a time where I felt like I couldn't even say the word God, but I was like, I'm willing to believe that there's something out there, or even within me. I just didn't even know, but I was like, okay, I'm willing to believe, like, if this is where my life is going and this is what I have to do to recover, like, just gonna take the direction of like what other people are saying. And really what that meant was like, I just made a decision to embark on this journey. Like, I didn't really know exactly what I was doing, but I was like, okay. Like, you tell me I have to be willing, you tell me I have to like do these things, like, I'll do it. And so, it says being convinced we were at step three, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God. As we understood God, just what do we mean by that, and what do we have to do? The first requirement is that we had to be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. And like, I was in so much collision with people. And not until this program did I realize like I was getting the ball rolling in different places. So like when I was asked to like do anything that was outside of what I wanted to do, it was like that those people are wrong. The world is like messed up. Like it needs to change. Can't believe these people are like that. Like, can you believe this? You know, just like my fixed ideas about the world and the way it should be. And you know, when things didn't go my way, I pushed harder. It says, what usually happens? The show doesn't come off very well. She begins to think her life doesn't treat her right. She decides to exert herself more. Like, if I just try harder, like, can everyone just see what is going on here? You know, this has, that has nothing to do with food. That's like my thoughts and my feelings about life and people and the way things should be. And, you know, it's really like a self-will run riot, although she usually doesn't think so, you know, and I didn't think so at the time, but I was like, okay, like I'll believe that. And when I started to think of like selfishness, because it says like, you know, selfishness is the root of our problems and selfish, like all this stuff about selfishness. And I was like, these people are like yelling at me. Like this big book is like yelling at me, like judging me, you know? And it was just very simple for me to think like selfish just means that things aren't going the way I want them to go. And because they're not going the way I want them to go, I have some sort of like reaction. And if I stopped having a script for how everything should go, then I can see that the world is just run as God has it, or this world is just run the way it's meant to happen, basically. And people are just doing what they're meant to do. And so I took inventory. I did a four step and I looked at like where was I resentful? And when I stepped from one side, like I think of it as like a courtroom. I'm like the like prosecuting attorney and I'm like, you know, looking at everything that everyone else has done. But then I go to the other side. And now I'm like the defense. Okay, well, like where are those people right and I'm wrong? You know, like where did my instincts go wrong? Where did I start to run the show and want things a certain way? Like, was I rude in any certain situations? Was I, you know, being controlling or trying to get my way? Did I say something rude? Was I having a belief, a dishonest belief about the world? Was I afraid? Was I reacting out of fear? And it's like, oh yeah, I like all of those things. Like I'm just insecure and something was threatened and I wanted to get my way and I have behaviors where I lash out because of that. And it's like, OA gave me like an ability to like pinpoint these things that I didn't know were actually happening. And when I can do that, you know, it says that resentment is our number one offender. It destroys more compulsive eaters. I'm just changing alcoholics to compulsive eaters. It destroys more compulsive eaters than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease, for we have not only been mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. And like when I'm resentful, like I have a spiritual disease, and like this still happens with me, but I know like how harmful it is. So I have tools today that I call my sponsor or a friend, and I like tell on myself, and it's like even if I still believe or have my foot down about some sort of fixed idea, like at the end of the day, like I want recovery more, so I know that I need to have a changed perspective for me to get out of that thinking, or my life depends on it. So like, do I really want to die on that hill? Like, no, I'm open to having a changed perspective. And happened today, like with my husband, like something I thought about with my husband, you know, I'm right, I'm right, I'm right. And it's like, maybe I'm not right. And God, can you just like help me like be willing to like be honest about it and see where I'm at fault. And, you know, this process, like, it lifts resentments. It leads right into, like, okay, I'll see. It talks a lot about resentments. It's plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? It's fatal. We shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity returns, and then we die, basically, is what it says. And, that's not what I want. So I just have to choose, like, what is more important, my recovery or this belief that I have about this situation? And my recovery is more important because I have gone through, like, the depths of hell in my disease that, like, I'm willing to do anything, like, change my mind, basically, which is often the hardest thing for me to do is to change my mind about something. So we avoid retaliation or argument. We put out of our minds the wrongs others done. We look for our mistakes. Like, we look at our fears and what would God have us be instead of fearful. And that gave me something to, like, strive for. Like, if I'm not afraid, I'm in self-reliance. I'm afraid, so I'm reacting in all these crazy ways. But what if I wasn't afraid? What if God could instill in me a sense of, like, peace and comfort? And, with my relationships, I look at, like, how am I treating people? How have I treated people? What are my ideals moving forward? All this is not to, like, beat myself up. It's just to see, like, where have I gone wrong and what can I do to rectify those situations and how can I be better in the future, basically. And I'm a teacher and, I'm actually also in school and I'm taking this class. It's talking about, like, we want to create a safe environment for kids to know that they can make mistakes and learn from them. And, like, I also need to create that environment for myself. Like, I need to admit when I'm wrong, and I need to be able to learn from those things and strive to do better next time. And that's what this program has taught me. So 6 and 7, it's like, 6 is I'm willing to change. Step 6, I'm willing to change. And if I'm not, I just need to ask God to help me be more willing. Some things I'm not ready to give up. My beliefs, basically, those are probably the hardest things for me to change, are my beliefs about things. And then I ask God for help in step 7. And I move right forward. Steps 8 and 9 are like, I'm actually now moving to chapter 6 because it's all about into action, about, like, I admit when I'm wrong. I have to admit when I'm wrong, and I have to make amends when I've harmed people. My husband's been getting the wrath of my, like, character defects. He's the only one I live with, so I have to call myself out. I called my sponsor and told her, like, well, she already knew because it's on my nightly inventory. She's like, what's going on? And blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, I need a changed attitude. I need a changed perspective. And, like, I need to do, I just need to be honest with people so I can treat my husband with respect, so I can treat my friends and my family with respect. And in turn, like, then I feel better and I don't have, like, the high and lows that I need to seek comfort from food. Like, I'm able to live each day without compulsively eating when I practice these principles and I follow these suggestions. So, it says in into action that we do the fifth step, we do steps 6 and 7, and I ask God to, to take this away. And I start to look like, hey, I'm ready to make my amends. And I remember when I had, like, a long list of amends. I've been cleaning them up as throughout the 7 years, so I don't like. But when I went through the full steps, like, I had, like, a list of people that I had really harmed. Friends from high school, people I used to work with, previous bosses. I mean, so many financial, and it says, like, we have to remind ourselves that we have decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience. And we ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. And Again, it's like, okay, a lot of it comes back to like, okay, I'm willing. Like, am I willing or am I not? If I am, then okay, let's like figure out a plan. Let's go forward and, one thing at a time. But for me, like a lot of it comes back to willingness. Like, am I willing to be honest? Am I willing to tell someone what's going on? Am I willing to look at myself? Am I willing to change? Am I willing to make things right? And, many people were very, very, very open to hearing my amends and very, like, I don't know if understanding is the right word, but just like people, it says in here, like, people generally, like, I can't remember the exact words, but generally appreciate, like, just the willingness to, like, do right. Just to try to make things right. And whether a person knows I'm working the 12 steps or not, these are all very general principles. Like these are, it says in here, these principles are like the principles of many denominations. Like it doesn't matter denominations or even, religious or not religious. Like these are very simple but not easy principles. So people generally understand, like, I reflected on this situation that wasn't my best. I want to make it right. Like, here's what I'm trying to do. Is there anything else I can do? We're trying to repair our relationships. And so I didn't always have to say to people, like, I am in a 12-step program and I am an overeater. It's just like I didn't always need to say that. It wasn't always appropriate. I can keep my anonymity. With, I can practice this program and do like work on myself and do these. Follow these principles without, shouting from the rooftops that I'm in Overeaters Anonymous. People at work don't know. I mean, a couple of friends know, but I don't know exactly what they know. But, it says whatever the situation, we usually have to do something about it. So there were situations where like I resented the people and I didn't really do anything, but I needed to, like write that in my mind mostly. And so I started doing like kind acts for that person or making an effort in other ways so that I could help change my, like, not that I could change my thinking, but that God eventually would, through those like acts of kindness or change perspectives, like that I would eventually have a new attitude towards those people. So I started just kind of trying to do things that would like demonstrate my. The opposite of what I was doing before. So that was helpful for some of my amends too, that were more like living amends. And I mean, every amends has a living amends. For me, it's like they're all connected to a living amends because I'm ultimately trying to change my behavior. And step 10 talks about like we like clean up things as we go and we make mistakes and we admit to them. And that to me is kind of easy for me to like admit where I'm wrong and like just try to make things right. Like I'm more in tune with my emotions now, so I know when I'm super high or low. I'm pretty like self-aware. I know when I made a mistake. Sometimes I don't, and I need other fellows to tell me I owe an amends for this, or have you thought about it in this way? But like being in community with OA people, it's like we're all living the same spiritual principles. So I'm constantly like around people and checking in with people that are also trying to live these principles. So it's honestly great. And then, all of this is helping me cultivate this relationship with a higher power. I didn't know exactly what I was getting into in the beginning. I didn't know that's what I was doing, but eventually I have this like inner resource that gives me direction and strength and a sense of calm. Like I can feel my higher power through like guidance and right direction. And I hear my higher power through people who I trust that I can share with or that I am, honest about my faults. I feel my higher power when I admit my wrongs to people. And I feel my higher power when I'm like honestly trying to do God's will. It's like, okay, God, what's your will for me? And how can I be helpful today? Our purpose now is to be of maximum service to others. And it's like, where can I be helpful? Not all, I mean, I don't always live with that mindset, but I try. Like, I try. And when I'm struggling, I come back to the point of, like, where can I be helpful? And it says, like, we're in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. Like, this is, so this is after step 10. This is, like, after I've worked step 10. So if you're not feeling these promises, like, this is after step 10. These all come in order. But like, I'm not fighting anything anymore. Like, I'm not interested in excess food. I'm not trying to avoid temptation like in the beginning. Like, I'm not like trying to put my head down when I walk through kitchens. I feel safe and protected. And this is how I react so long as I keep in fit spiritual condition. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. So, like, I'm constantly trying to ask God in step 11, like prayer, meditation, what is God, like, what is your will for me? Like seeking guidance throughout the day, trying to pause when I'm agitated, and then like passing it on. Step 12 has been so meaningful for me. Like, I'll be going through the book and I'll be like, wow, I really needed to hear that. Or, just having like spiritual insights. And, here I am like trying to take someone else through the book or share my own experience. And I'm getting filled with like all of these like wonderful benefits. And so I do sponsor, and I have a sponsor, and I enjoy sponsoring. I think that the time I spend sharing my experience with other people, and even sharing like on this meeting, like it fills me up. Like, it really does fill me up. And it's just like sometimes I'm like, wow, like how did my life get like here from where it was, and like just one day at a time. Like, I remember counting 30 days, 60 days, 90 days. And then it was like, oh my God, like I got a year. And then I remember thinking, like, oh my God, 2 years. And then the years just start passing because I'm having a good time in recovery. I have friends, like really, really good close friends in this program. And like people that like I love and trust so much. Like, I've gone to California to the birthday party. I've stayed with my sponsor. She's come here. I have friends on this meeting that I've seen and hung out with in person, and like people I hope to meet in the future. I am going in November to a convention, and like my local area does stuff around here, and I like to volunteer for that. In October, there's a like 1 day retreat, so I'm gonna go to that. So I just like the activities too. Like, I like the way I feel in recovery. I like the principles that are guiding me today. It says like our roots grasp a new soil, and like this program helps me be a better person. Like, it really, really does. And I always tell the story because I just love it. But my husband said to me one time, he's a normie. He sees me on meetings, like he doesn't know exactly what I do, but he knows my friends in the program. And like, he just knows I don't eat certain things, and like I weigh and measure my food, and it's just like he knows those things. But he also sees me like walk away when I need to like take a breather, or he sees me like admitting I'm wrong or making, amends, and which he loves the amends. He can't wait for the amends because he's just waits, and he says, like, I always know you're gonna make amends. And yes, I will definitely be open for an amends. But he said to me one time, like, I don't know exactly what you do. Like, I don't know exactly what you do, but I like what we have. So just keep doing what you're doing. And to me, that's like so beautiful because, it says in the book too, like if we adopt like a spiritual life, our families are better off for it. And like sometimes they even start to adopt like spiritual life. And but basically, it's just these principles that we're living by. And so yeah, I'm happy to answer any questions, or I'll put my number in the chat. very grateful to be here to share my story, and thanks for listening, and I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Abby. That was awesome.